Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Think of us as your next door neighbor that makes off-putting remarks about being attracted to you that always makes you uncomfortable, or better yet, don't think of us that way. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and please don't think about us that way. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm eating a pizza. I'm Emily Suey.
Booyah. This episode was produced by the prettiest bride of them all, Jason Deafness, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. We now join the singing of the Pod Spangled Banner, already in progress. Ands and casters, red glare, my headphones are somewhere. Pop filter absent. Leaves my microphone bare. Oh, hey, Arnold podcaster, please do tell me that we are evermore spelling kids with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest. Please welcome back to the show, further bolstering our Season 5 entourage, Nikki Horowitz. Nikki, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for being here, and thank you for standing, being at the ready, saluting. This is, I don't know, the only star-spangled banner that I will abide by, the pod spangled banner, and it was nice to have everybody here for it, nice to have Nikki here for it. It should be noted, we are here to talk about episode 88 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 5, episode 8, going by production code order. We're going to start, as we always do, with episode A, which is called Ghost Bride. Original air date, November 11th, 2003. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. And, okay, I'm going to make a bet with myself. I can get through this in two breaths. I think one breath is a little steep, but I'm going to go two breaths. So let's see how this goes. Gerald tells the story of the ghost bride, Cynthia Snell, and how she brutally murdered her fiancé after he left her waiting at the altar and married her sister, who she also murdered. When the police came to the scene, she was still there sitting in a rocking chair in her wedding gown, tossing rice on the bodies as she hummed the wedding march, and before they could arrest her, she jumps out of the second-story window and killed herself instantly. She also happens to be buried in the cemetery near the gang's neighborhood and supposedly comes back from the dead every anniversary of the murders. Arnold, Jared, Eugene, Harold, Sid, and Snicky are scared twice by Hogan Curly, each pretending to be the ghost bride. Saliva's building up from the jelly bean that I ate before recording. I'm going to do one more breath. Helga, because she wanted to get back at the boys for not inviting her, and Curly, because he was jealous he did not get to tell a ghost story. As punishment, the kids tap Curly in the crypt, where at the end he hears the real Cynthia Snell, although it's possible that he was only hallucinating. That was very underwhelming. I'm sorry I couldn't do it for y'all. And shouting out the folks who made this episode possible. Christine Kolosov directed this one. Steve Vixton got the writing credit. And Jonathan Wikipedia summoned that episode description. Let's get into some takes. Nikki, let's start with you. What did you think about this particular ghost bride?
This one was so much more complex than I gave it credit for on my initial watch. And it also has a lot of layers to the story. So the initial myth is about Cynthia Snell having been spurned at the altar. So she walks 13 blocks to her sister's literal two-story house, axe murders her husband-to-be, who has been stolen, and her sister, sits there all night, just singing the wedding march song and throwing rice until the cops come, at which point she jumps out the second story window and dies instantly. And I'm baffled. They do an external shot of the house. How did she manage to die like that anyway? But the thing is, like, they see her tombstone in real life, and it's like this probably actually happened, because the rhyme on the tombstone is about her going to a place that Arnold is not allowed to read out loud, you know, kind of implying that she was like a terrible enough person that they inscribed it on her tombstone, like forever.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I never even thought of that. But what? How? Who do you have to be to get a tombstone that's like that?
For real? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like, but she also died from a second story window. So anyway, there's like some kind of mythology here that I found pretty interesting. So the episode carries on, and they say, you know, Curly kind of has this tantrum about not being allowed to tell the story that Gerald just told, and the whole group does not care. I thought that that was a really interesting little thing. Like, Curly's emotions do not matter to anyone, and they say later on that they're going to come back and, you know, get scared at the cemetery, basically, and they tell Helga she's not allowed actively. They don't even think about where Curly is that night. They're just like, whatever. But Helga, you specifically can't come. And Helga is a feminist queen and says, no, I'm going to scare you guys. I am not having this. And I appreciated that. And she did it. She scared them. And it was a beautiful moment. And then the real ghost bride of Curly shows up. And okay, so he scares everybody. He scares Helga. They all run into the crypt and hide, which is somehow less scary than actually confronting this ghost. I mean, sure. A crypt is a ghost's house. Like, what are you doing? I don't want to be in there. So they do that. And Arnold finally figures out it's Curly because he remembers the socks, which is like, they don't even register that it could be Curly. Like, they're just like, he was wearing those socks. Like, oh, remember the socks, not the person. And in the end, they do something that is done on sitcoms relatively often, where a punishment really far outweighs the crime. Curly was making a point about how they don't care about him and scares them. And then they tie him up and abandon him in a crypt. Like, he could die. Like, someone is going to have to find him. So I just don't even know. Like, this episode is a lot about how little they care about Curly, which is kind of really sad and kind of really funny at the same time. And also just, I thought it was really fun. Also, my last note for this particular part of this podcast is that the sound effects in this episode are amazing. Like, if you listen close, this is a study in how sound effects can build emotional spaces in cartoons. Really, really well done. It was a detail I only noticed on this last watch, but oh, wow. Really great.
Wow. You set a pretty good tone for this episode. There's a lot to dig into, including the grave of the ghost bride. Ooh, connections, parallels. You get it? Emily, let's go to you next. What did you think about this episode?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I really loved your takes, Nikki. I just bouncing off what you were just saying, one of my main notes was about way to go art department and sound effects department. They had so many great shots in this episode, and they really went all in on like the spooky goosebumps type of episode, which we have seen before with like Headless Cabby and some other ones that I'm going to forget the names of right now, but kind of like a Teen Nick type of goosebumps realm of Hey Arnold, at least. So we're in an actually really scary story too that the kids are telling. But yeah, as far as like way to go art department and sound effects, we have the overcast sky, the full moon, we got some dark shadows, the gray fog that's like lifted all across the graveyard. There's a bunch of crows, and like the gravestones themselves are super detailed and with cracks and moss covering all of them. Yeah, really awesome, like whistling wind and lightning strikes and the chain that's jangling around and even like a wolf howling. So they went all in, and I love it a lot for that. They did great with the aesthetics. I think it's kind of crazy that this is so scary of a story, considering this is, yeah, a young child's show or a young children's show. even at the beginning of the episode, Stinky is talking about like existential dread and like realism of how we're all going to die. And as they look out on the gravestones and he's like, you know, we're all going to be in there. And they're like we need to move on because they're not going to think about that or have a conversation about that. They're in fourth grade. But yeah, the whole story of the bride being stood up at the altar and the groom like cheating on her with her sister and an axe murder suicide situation with cops and my goodness. Yeah, it's a lot for some fourth graders to retell and then wander around at night freaking themselves out about. I think there's some cool stuff with gender too, which Nikki was kind of pointing to. We have Harold, who's obviously like one of the most scaredy cats of the bunch, who likes to act tough sometimes, but he's usually the most chicken, telling Helga, girls get scared too easy. And then her going all out on scaring the boys for excluding her from this endeavor. Also, other stuff with gender. Curly as the ghost bride in the dress, and then Eugene making a point of like, I can't believe how nice you look in that dress, and they just like keep the episode moving right along. But there's some fun stuff there that play on gender roles, and what else? I don't think it's necessarily like a funny episode, but I think it's very artfully done, and I'm surprised by it because of how adult it seems, or not even adult, like teenager realm of Goosebumpsy haunted story. And yeah, I don't know, maybe the message is like check on your friends or notice when someone goes missing and is maybe haunting your group. I don't know. But yeah, what did y'all think about Ghost Bride?
I think we ought to check in with the person who suspiciously enough is wearing the same socks that Curly did in the episode. So we may want to check in with our friend Harry. Harry, how are you doing? And more importantly, what did you think of this episode?
I'm also wearing a full wedding dress, which it's conspicuous that you didn't notice that first.
Well,
but
I was going to say, and you look very nice in it, by the way.
Thank you very much. I was looking for that. I have to say, I was taken aback. I am... as longtime listeners will know, a longtime Curly stan, despite Curly. And I didn't even think about how dirty he gets done in this episode. So thank you very much for pointing that out, Nikki, especially in a show that's sort of all about extending empathy toward the marginalized and considering all points of view, no matter how sort of far afield or silly they may seem. Curly is just very much like the open target for in this show that the show themselves just feel that they can pick on, I guess, because he is so specifically retaliatory with his anger and his feelings of disenfranchisement. It becomes okay to sort of like put him back in his place because you kind of get the sense that like, well, Curly's just, he's out for vengeance. He's not actually taking it on the chin. He's going to be sort of resilient in that way. But that's really fascinating, and I hope we can talk more about it. I was totally like ready to talk about how I like this episode and how I really like specifically the like childhood's phenomena it recalls, where it's like as soon as you sort of like confront something that is frightening to you, there is this sort of like attraction repulsion where it is at once scarier than really anything is in your adult life, but also especially as a kid you have this almost immediate temptation to test your limits with it, to sort of like confront it or delve into it and explore it. I think that's why like horror movies and horror media are like so, there's something that feels so sort of forbidden and appealing about them, especially when you're a little bit too young for them. That was like a big sense I got from this episode. And I think that like testing your boundaries in that way is like a really potent coming of age phenomenon. So it makes a lot of sense that Hey Arnold would tackle it. And I also really like that this episode comes out so hard against gatekeeping that kind of phenomena, or pretending like you are sort of more ready or more capable of facing that than your peers, right? I think that it's not an accident that everybody in this episode who pretends like they're more equipped for scary stories or what have you end up getting their karmic comeuppance, right? Like at the end, everybody is equal under their fear of really death, but more specifically the ghost bride, right? Like Helga is going to show the boy. Well, first of all, she manages to scare the boys when they're sexist toward her. But then she, in turn, is scared by Curly. Curly is, in turn, scared by the Ghost Bride. In the end, everybody's afraid, and that's okay. So, like, this sort of making fun of your friends for maybe being more obviously afraid or afraid of different things than you is ultimately just going to come back to bite you because, you know, in the end, you're just as afraid as they are. I really like that. I think that there's something really comforting for children about that, right? This idea that, like, hey, listen, like, your friends that are acting like big tough guys are scared too, even if they're pretending they're not. And there's something to be remembered there, and like, you should remember to, or you should remember that maybe the reason they're acting out in the first place is because they're scared, which I kind of like. But yeah, I think that Cody, your summary also pointed out that, like, there's so much plot in this episode for like an 11 minute episode or whatever it is. Or in our case, what was it, like a 14 minute episode, because it Paramount Plus went ahead and looped the beginning for us, which was kind of spooky in and of itself. But I really like episodes like this that sort of leverage season five to its fullest by using pre-established character norms to sort of create more complex plots than might otherwise be possible. I think it's kind of amazing that we are able to have this much flashback into sort of like storytelling and also have like two different like scare plots unfold simultaneously, right, between Helga and Curly. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe we can talk about the ending some more, because on the sort of like A plot thematic side, I understand its utility, leaving Curly tied up. It's sort of funny. It shows that he gets his comeuppance, right? He's scared in the end too. And that's what he gets for wanting a place in the group, I guess. Which is or like trying to impugn on Gerald's territory. So that was kind of a weird sour note to go out on. But ultimately, I like this episode a lot. I think it's really firing on all cylinders. And I think it's like a really worthy addition to one of the weirdly most recurring, but also one of my favorite subplots of Hey Arnold, which is the spooky episode. It just feels like there are like four or five like distinct episodes that are all about being kind of spooky, right? We've got the haunted train, the headless cabbie, obviously the Halloween episode, though ironically that one's not a great example, right? Because it's actually kind of more about some other things, but stuff like that. So Cody, what did you think about this one?
I think the big misstep with Curly's trajectory is, look, you want to work your way into a new or familiar but maybe new to him social circle, you got to demonstrate value. You can't try and, you know, he came out, his problem was he came out and he tried to be an alpha right away. You mess with Gerald, the best storyteller in the land. Listen, you mess with the most, you get haunted by a ghost. That's the Curly way. And that he was left to his fate, and that's what happens. Wow. So I don't know, just something to think about. But no, I really like what everybody got to. And I guess one inroad that I'm gonna put out there, and it's what I've been doing with the handful of season five episodes that we've talked about so far, just kind of finding ways in which these episodes distinctly or like how they would be different from maybe like a season one through four flavoring of the same kind of episode, that sort of, you know, spooky episode territory. And I think all of these points are somewhat related to where the fact that they didn't just do like the group getting haunted by a ghost episode, or the group getting fooled by Helga pretending to be a ghost, or the group getting fooled by Curly trying to be a ghost. It does all of those things. And because it's like all of those things are, I'm using the word crammed, but I'm using it like affectionately because I do really like this episode, and I like everything, like I like the ambition of it. I like the efficiency and kind of like the economy of all of those things paired with a flashback sequence, like because this episode has that flashback as well. Don't forget, like there's a lot in this episode, and the fact that it was so plotty maybe is what contributed to it feeling, having more of like that that goosebumpsy vibe, you know, where it's we're focusing so much on like all of these different sources of horror and paranoia, and we're getting great reactions from the group of like seeing all of these characters getting spooked in different ways, where like Harold is wearing it on his sleeve and Arnold is very like, well, there's probably a reason for this, and he's sort of you know, he's eventually bursting at the seams, and like you can sort of see him start to sweat as well. Seeing that with everybody is great fun. There's just maybe less room for the humor of it, which I didn't think about it until, you know, y'all were characterizing this episode so well that we don't come away with this with the same type of like humorous sort of energy that we might get from this energy, from the similar type of episode. But being excluded and being spooked, those don't necessarily have to be funny. I really like this. The Ghost Bride went and got hers, which, you know, it is what it is. I can't help but just like laugh when these episodes, same as the episode with Stinky being a vampire, the sort of one-off, like we're gonna end this episode with a big question mark, and like it, you know, it's not gonna amount to anything, but it is one final fun gag, and I always appreciate that. I would have been a little bummed if that didn't be the case, forgetting for a fact that Curly was left to his death in the tomb. That does maybe feel a little bit weird, but again, mess with the most, et cetera. But yeah, anyways, I'm kind of rambling at this point. I came away really liking this episode. I didn't really have a great memory of it. But as we watched more of it, I think the pieces started to come back, and I have a place in my heart and my mind and my memories for the Ghost Bride. She shan't be forgotten anytime soon. RIP.
RIP. I was just going to say, I definitely think that this is like by far the scariest Hey Arnold has gotten or ever will get. I was remembering just back to the other spooky episodes Harry was mentioning. And then one scene that is pointed out a lot in like fandom of the show, which is from season one, that episode, Part-Time Friends, where Arnold and Gerald are working at Mrs. Vitell's flower shop. There's the flashback scene, or not flashback, nightmare sequence in it where Grandpa Phil is like a zombie and his jaw falls off and he's sitting on the bus, and it's about his rivalry with best friend rival Jimmy Kafka. But I think that this episode, though, Ghost Bride, is like the scariest full-length episode of the series. But there are so many good ones. As Harry was pointing out, it's kind of like a good side canon within this whole series to have maybe a spooky episode or two every season.
Another thing I really like about this that we kind of, or I literally just thought of as we were talking about it, because it didn't even occur to me, is that this is also an urban legend episode, right? Like it literally, like Gerald is the keeper of the tale and he recites the tale. And that's the sort of focal point for the entire tension of the episode, which sort of introduces some two really interesting things about urban legends themselves and the Hey Arnold sort of mythos. One, which is that like this is also like, I think, correct me, no, maybe not, but like ironically, but like one of the first times the kids openly discuss murder having occurred in the past. So it's kind of a really fascinating way for them to process and sort of like recontextualize and in their own way reckon with like real historical events that are very frightening for them to consider, right? Like, I guess, yeah, you're right, Cody, the Headless Cabbie is also that, although that's more sort of supernatural even, right? Like that's done by a ghost by the time it happens, and it's sort of like left up in the air or less explicitly stated, right? Like I think it's highly implied the Headless Cabbie's head comes flying off, but they sort of are elegant about that. And then it's interesting to think about urban legends as sort of a way for these kids to process the stories of the city that are happening around them, which also makes their sort of reaction and ownership over these stories interesting, right? Like there's this weird ownership battle where Curly's like, oh, I want to tell this story. We don't get to hear Curly's version of the story, but I wonder if it would have been different, right? Like maybe it would have had a different message. Maybe it would have meant something different. And so maybe that's part of why the kids were so defensive about it, right? Because like they want it to ultimately mean what it means to them. And so this sort of becomes this, this like quarrel over not only who gets to tell the story, but who sort of gets to determine what the stories mean, right? And so they want to keep that out of Curly's hands because, and you know, maybe wisely, because who knows what Curly would turn that story into, right? And so they're sort of, and these stories clearly have power for these kids, as they do for all kids. I think that in its own way too, then this becomes an episode about remembering why and how these stories are powerful, right? Because like, I think that they sort of take it for granted, and that's what allows them to be so frightened, right? Is they think that they're sort of above these stories, not unlike Helga or unlike Curly. And so that ends up being their comeuppance. And it's this sort of reminder that, hey, like the stories you tell have power over you too. And it's important to remember that. That's an interesting point for this episode to make, I think.
Yeah, I love that. I think drilling down on just the idea of the power of stories as a focal point for this episode and how they give you personal power is significant. Like, this is something that's true as adults. It's, you know, like, who gets to write a TV show? You know, what narrative gets put out? Even the news, like, who gets to write a news story? And how does that sway how people think about a certain thing? Like, the real depth of power to stories with human minds is something that I don't even think we can fully comprehend after thousands of years of telling them, because they so richly build out and define the world that we live in. And, you know, in good ways and in ways like we see in this episode, where we learn to be really afraid of things through storytelling, and can even be swayed in our perspective for better or worse through storytelling, which I think Hey Arnold sometimes tries to do, is to, like you said, like there's a lot of extending compassion to marginalized people or people who are typically ignored, which I think is a way the show subtly is saying, hey, it's good to care about other people. And yeah, that is a really great thing to zero in on, I think. And even that's something I might carry forward into just other episodes of the show, that like the way that they frame certain narratives so often drives where the story goes, how characters are thinking about a situation or what they care about in that situation, just based on the story.
Yeah, well, and going back to your thoughts on the ending, Nikki, I'm having trouble sort of like reconciling that ending even more, right? And like, it's okay, because like that ending is funny and I get the note that they wanted to go out on, but it is kind of annoying, right? That like, I think one of the big morals of this episode, if you want to call it that, is like also that you have to like remember the moral of the stories you tell and try to incorporate it into your life, or sort of like teller beware, right? Because like the Ghost Bride story itself is also about exclusion, right? It's about like they tried to cut the Ghost Bride out of her own story, so she changed the ending, right? It was sort of like, well, like you're trying to tell me like I don't matter and I don't have a part of this. Well, guess what? Like, now you murdered. But Curly and Helga kind of do the same thing, right? So they end up recreating the sort of moral of the Ghost Bride story. So I wonder if I would have liked this episode to end differently, maybe at the cost of the sort of humor of seeing Curly get locked in the cellar, or the crypt, excuse me. Maybe it would have been nice if they would have been like, guys, like maybe we should let Curly tell the next story or something like that. But who knows, you know? What do you think, Cody?
I think, listen, you've seen Hey Arnold. Gerald tells all the stories. Again, it's written. That's how it goes.
It's a click.
It is. It is a click. And you know what? Clicks are hard to get into. And I can't help but think about, now I'm blanking out on who said it, but I wrote it down. It's when they were just, I guess, like getting into the cemetery and getting into the spookies of it all. But it's, I'm scared. And we're all going to die, but I'm not chicken. And there is
Harold. Classic Harold.
That is classic Harold. And I mean, to a broader extent, it is classic, like childhood in general, of just the like the it's that silent sort of competition you have where you don't want to, like, you don't want to admit being scared. You don't want to admit any sort of like being vulnerable in like in a group of, you know, like elementary age students. I mean, being vulnerable in front of anybody is extremely frightening, but that is like a pointedly horrifying facet of being like a kid growing up and like not wanting to, I don't know, like maybe the fact that Harold is so like he is the quote unquote coded bully of the group, and he can also simultaneously like wear his fear more so on his sleeve just because he can afford to do that, because he has the image of like being an elementary age bully, and like there are varying degrees of willingness to show that vulnerability or like be logical in the face of fear. I just thought, and maybe I'm just reading too far into it now, but I like that that's something that permeates this episode and a lot of episodes of Hey Arnold. I mean, heck, a lot of episodes that of like animated programming or non-animated programming that take place with you know, characters around this age, and you know, the fact that Curly made them all feel vulnerable, maybe not the best way to get them to let you join their group, but he took a big swing. I appreciate big swings, as I always do, so it was a nice attempt from Curly, but you know, maybe next time.
Yeah, well, and I like the way that you sort of characterize that, because it does get at this sort of like double-edged sword or irony of these stories that kids tell and that we all tell, really, which is that like they are a way for them to sort of abstract these really frightening concepts and ideas into something that can be more safely processed and safely compartmentalized and eventually even sort of played with, right? Like that's what the story does. Like you make this sort of like old murder that happened in your city into a ghost story, and then it's like not just scary, it's also like interesting and exciting and sort of like it's something that you own. But I think it's important not to forget in the process like why you had to make it a story in the first place, or like why that story has power, right? Like this idea that like, well, like it just because it belongs to you doesn't mean that you control it, right? Doesn't mean that it's just yours. It belongs to everybody, and it can be, it can exert power over you as well as the others, you know? I think that that's the sort of lesson that the fellas, as they call themselves in this episode, hilariously, learn at one point.
That point was scary good. Cha-ching. Hey, any other lingering thoughts, threads, shout-outs from this episode before we wind down on this one?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to come back to what Emily had brought up about where Eugene flatters Curly's look in the dress. And I don't know about you, but I grew up in Plymouth, Minnesota, where if you had said anything like that at that age, you would be relentlessly bullied. And this was still produced, you know, concurrently to when that would have been happening for me in real life. So I just want to, you know, shout out Hey Arnold for promoting just an accepting view of people. Like Eugene's a master of self-acceptance. That's a fact. But at the same time, the show allows for that. The show gives Eugene friends who don't really care that Eugene is Eugene. They appreciate and accept the walking disaster that is Eugene. And in moments like that, where it's like, Eugene's just a little different. It's not like, you know, really anything where some like vehicle is being destroyed or something. It's just Eugene is a little different from the rest. Maybe they're fine with it. They're cool with it. They, like Emily said, it just keeps going. So I just think that's great. I think if more people embodied that, even if they don't understand or accept something in other people, where they just kind of let people be, we would be in a better world.
Amen. Shout out to Eugene Horowitz and Nikki Horowitz, the keeper of the Eugene Horowitz tale. Also shout out again to the art department, because I didn't mention this other note, which was, when they're in the crypt, they're looking through this cool clover-looking window, and there's some really good shots of the kids' faces through that window and through another like vine-covered window. Love the art department. Also, shout out to their autumn outfits, which we've seen them wear in other spooky episodes, such as Headless Cabbie.
Oh, and, wow, great point. Yep, great, great autumn outfits.
They've got to wear them if it's a little chilly out, you know? They did that in the Thanksgiving one too. Shout out also to the wedding march being described as like a catchy tune, I think several times in this episode. And then one last shout out goes to the one line that probably made me laugh the most in it, and not necessarily a funny episode, but this line from Stinky got me. Stinky was clearly really scared, as they all were, and pretending not to be. And he goes, "Well, I reckon we solved it. There's no ghost, Brad." And they try to move it right along. Shout outs.
That's after they'd been in the graveyard for like 15 seconds, right? Like they literally walk in and he's like, nope, no ghost bride here. I guess we're out of here. Really good.
Yeah, case closed.
Let's see. I've got two shout outs. One shout out, I found it really, really funny when they try to get out of the cemetery after they're being scared of Helga, the ghost bride, and the gates close in front of them and then start rattling eerily as if a ghost is shaking them. And then it zooms out and it shows that Helga has jury-rigged some kind of like pulley device and is pulling back and forth on it to make the gates rattle. Meanwhile, she's just cackling like a mad woman. I found that to be such a funny visual gag. Also, I guess shout out to Steve Vixton. I think that like, especially that beginning, he like clearly just wanted to write a ghost story. And I found the image of the ghost bride after having just axe murdered her husband to be and sister sitting in a rocking chair and just throwing wedding rice just sort of like nonchalantly out of a big bag of rice. Absolutely hilarious. Like they sort of like stick and move from that joke really fast. But God, was that a funny image, right? She's like wearing a blood covered wedding dress and just like throwing rice up in the air. And it's like, I would love to see that in like a big budget horror movie or something. Like Ready or Not or something, right? Like it's hilarious. So shout outs to that. Oh, and bad shout out to Paramount Plus for like really screwing up the beginning of this episode. It's super weird. It started on Paramount Plus like right as Curly was putting his foot down, then led up to the point where Curly said he could say the story better, and then the episode starts over, like opening credits and all. Super confusing. For a minute we all thought that they were doing some kind of like Rashomon like take on that, where it was like, oh, I get it, now the episode's starting over, but it's going to be from Curly's perspective. But that's not what happened. Unfortunately, it was just a weird editing decision or mistake. So you know, we're glad we can watch Hey Arnold Paramount Plus, but shape up.
Hear, hear. Boo, Paramount Plus, boo.
Boo.
Boo, please sponsor us. Boo.
Boo. After that, they may not want to, because we gotta go toss rice onto the corpse of Paramount Plus. So do not touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 88B up next, and that episode is called, you already heard it, Gerald versus Jamie O. Original air date, November 11th, 2003. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. It's considerably shorter than episode A. Gerald gets jealous because he thinks Jamie O is trying to steal the girl he likes, when actually the girl likes Jamie O and is using Gerald to get close to him. A special Wikipedia note, though, this episode first aired on Ketnet in Belgium. I'm not going to go through the Ketnet spiel again. Go back and listen to episode 82 if you're curious to hear a little bit more about that. We talked about that for probably too long, but and if you want to become a little bit more worldly, go back, re-download that episode. It shares revenue with us. It's a win-win for everybody. The people who won this episode are as follows: Christine Kolosoff, who directed, and Michelle Lamoureux, who got the writing credit for this one. And I realize we did not decide who would be going. Oh yeah, well, Harry, tough toenails, we're throwing it to you first. You're gonna set the
tone
for
this episode.
That was
what we agreed on. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Okay, just making sure. What did you think about Gerald versus Jamie O, the showdown of the season?
Thank you. Hey, Arnold, sit down. I think we have to have a conversation about this at this point. This has become something that it's a pattern of bad behavior that I think we have to address. Michelle, I know you're better than this. I should say Ms. Lamoureux. I'm not that familiar with you. We have to address the elephant in the room with this episode, right? Which is that it is yet another episode in which women are just sort of like evil, deceitful creatures to come between our main characters and their friends and or family. This is like the fourth or fifth episode where there is a very two-dimensional crush type character introduced who has an elaborate deceitful plan to manipulate the feelings and affections of the children who fall for her, for her own ends. I kind of like, I get, okay, hey Arnold, I understand that this is a parallel episode to the other Jamie-O episode where this basically same thing happens, except for Gerald notices that Jamie-O is being used. Does not help you overcome the growing misogyny allegations that we are unfortunately going to have to level against you, especially after episodes like Summer Love just sort of like have to, like, we have to address this, right? Like, I don't think this is a good idea for a plot. I don't think this is something that is happening so frequently in the lives of children that we have to spell it out this often. It makes me feel, honestly, I hate to come at you like this. It's got real, like, newly divorced guy energy. Hey, Arnold, you're really coming off like you're working through some personal problems in your children's show. We don't need it. And I don't want it, especially for a show that has so many strong female characters and so many great plots involving those female characters. I think that because of the emphasis that this episode takes on the girl who comes into their lives, Chloe, it's not even a particularly good Jamie-O versus Gerald episode. I would have loved to see more of their dynamic. I really liked the early parts where Jamie-O is just being sort of like a troublesome, annoying, evil older brother to Gerald. That felt resonant to me as a as it would maybe relate to kids who have older brothers who sort of like pick on them and bully them just because they're older. And then it departs into this, right? Which is this really weird, really toxic, masculine sort of like vision of not only like Gerald feeling like cucked by his older brother in some really weird ways, but also just this idea that like, oh, if a woman has a crush on you, there is a very real possibility that she's using that crush to manipulate you and get what she really wants, which in this case is Gerald's older brother. I don't like that. It's not, I don't think it's appropriate, frankly, for a show like this to keep bringing up. Maybe it's sort of salacious and sort of spicy, and that's what we're going for here, but I don't know. It's just not, it's not something that I enjoy watching, and it makes this episode, it's just a real wasted opportunity, I think, because like I said, I think that like there is something really interesting, to the Gerald Jamie-O dynamic, especially because it's a dynamic that is so pointedly missing from Hey Arnold's life, right? Like he does not have a nuclear family situation, so he doesn't have an older brother. But instead of getting any of that, we get this like rehash of one, the other Jamie-O episode almost exactly, but in reverse, and two, a rehash of the most problematic themes of the series. I called him Hey Arnold again, didn't I, Cody? I do that, yeah, when I get incensed sometimes. It's okay.
No, that's fair.
I'm going to call them all by their appropriate names, which is Hey Gerald and Hey Jamie-O and Hey Chloe. All of their first names are Hey and their last name is whatever their name is. But yeah, I'm interested. I'm sorry if I came off super negative about this episode. I just like, I feel like we have to like, it's a weird thing that we've noticed, especially in the back half of Hey Arnold. And it's something that like is super worth calling out, especially because like, again, I know Hey Arnold's better than this. Like I love this show very much, obviously. And it's so disappointing that like a show that gets so many things so right so often also has this weird undercurrent running through it in this very particular way with this manipulative woman trope that like we gotta excise, like get that out of here, especially for a show about and for 9-year-olds, right? It's just not appropriate. I think it like actually traffics in some legitimately harmful stereotypes that like kids would maybe take the wrong message from, which is a wild thing to sort of like level against Hey Arnold, because we spend so many times talking about how it does the opposite, right? But I don't know. I don't know if it's like a, if it's a function of its time or its place or what it is, or if it like just doesn't hold up, and maybe I'm applying too much of a 2023 lens to it. I don't think so, but yeah, I don't know. So, needless to say, I'm not a huge fan of this episode, but I'm interested to hear what everybody else thinks as well.
Me too. Thank you for that, Harry. Let's pivot. I should say thank you, Hey Harry. I will toss the mic. Let's say, Hey Emily. We'll
hey, Cody.
Queue it up for you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, Emily. What did you think of this? Oh, hey, hi. Hey, Emily. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think that this episode's bad. Agree with Harry. We watched this episode in person, which this one and the previous one was our first time watching Hey Arnold in person, if you can believe it. And we were all just kind of like bummed out at the end of this one, because we have seen the trope before with the manipulative woman, in particular, the manipulative woman trope of like a crush variety. So it's some sort of female character who is coming between a guy who has a crush on her or is playing him or whatever, usually is using him in some way. I think our most egregious episode previously of this was the Summer Love episode, which is just my least favorite of the whole series. But we had it in the other Jamie Owen Love episode. We've seen Connie and Maria do this, I guess, way back when in like season one. So there was like a little sprinkling of this at the start of the series, but it's kind of grown and grown as we've gotten into season four and five. That being said, I mean, women can be manipulative. Sure, people of any gender can be manipulative. They can be manipulative in this way, in the way that it's written in the plot. Sure. But the problem we're trying to outline is that it's become a pattern in the series and is unfortunate, especially because we don't really see any reversed gender roles with that type of plot. We've seen like manipulative dude characters before, I guess, with like Frankie G way back when, but in this way with the crush of someone who's using someone else and dangling a carrot on a string and saying, "Oh yeah, I like you," maybe, and using them in that way, that this is particular to that. So shame on you, I guess, for that part of this episode. But otherwise, I could say some other stuff about it. I really like at the very beginning of the episode when Gerald is traumatically falling to the ground holding a corn dog. And he has such a great performance right there on the sidewalk with Arnold. He's like, "Oh, why can't I for once in my life have something of my own?" And as he falls to the ground, he sees Chloe, who will be the manipulative woman in this episode. Also, quite an aged up episode, as we've also pointed out in seasons 4 and 5. That moment right there that I just described is like immediately followed by like a boy yoing sound effect. There's like a lot of winking going on. There's the muscular Janio with the torn shirt in like half the episode. Gerald just saying stuff like, "You're trying to steal my girl," and all of the things that Chloe does in the manipulative way to try to win over Janio that Gerald witnesses each moment of, like the wearing his Letterman jacket and in the weight room or something. And just like a lot of it, though, aged up across the board for the characters, being that they're in fourth grade. Chloe's in junior high, she says, so she's maybe in what, sixth grade. Jamio, is he in high school? Is he in eighth grade?
I think that they keep saying that Chloe is 13, which, very good point, Emily. Like, it's a weirdly sexually promiscuous episode. Like Chloe is presented as sort of sexually precocious. Like, I feel creepy even saying that, but it has to be said, right? Like, I think that like there's a lot of like weird metaphors for sexuality happening, and like Jamio is similarly like a big high school like 16-year-old, and she keeps alluding to the fact that like, oh, he's like, she wants him because like he's a full grown man, where like Gerald's just like a little boy, and like that's all really weird. Also, they're all black characters, which, it must be noted, like adds a really weird racial element to this too. Gerald and Jamio have like one of the series only fistfights later in the episode. It's silly to call it that because it's basically just Gerald like beating up on Jamio's chest, and Jamio's so big and tough that he just sort of throws him around. But like, that's weird. A lot of weird stuff. That's all I'm saying. But yes, I think Chloe is like, I think she's a seventh grader who's 13.
Yeah, definitely a lot of suggestive stuff for all the characters, and that was did not pass me either, the fact that these are all people of color in the show that they have made in these suggestive roles. So pretty weird and gross to do that, but otherwise, I guess I don't have a whole lot of great stuff to say about it, but I do like that at the end, at least, Chloe comes clean with both of the brothers. She has that conversation with them. They realize, you know, their misunderstanding, the brothers' misunderstanding with each other. So she has like that quick moment of kind of redemption or trying to, yeah, make amends, and kind of leaves the story, though. We don't see her again, I don't think. I hope not, unless we're going to have some other bigger redemption for that character. But and then Gerald talking, or Jamie O talking to Gerald at the end about how he, you know, the stuff he was saying is ringing true to him, and it's, he will try to be nicer and he will try to not take his things. But then it ends on like a bottom, because Jamie O does steal the pie at the end. So, yeah, not a great episode. The corn dog and the lemon icy ices look good, though, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, the good note to end on, because now I can't stop thinking about corn dogs and lemon ices. Our favorite corn dog is Nikki. Sorry, I have no segue for this. Nikki, what'd you think about this episode?
I'm a corn dog.
Own it. You deserve it.
Well, thanks for calling out the adultification of Black youth. That's totally a thing. And making Chloe into, yeah, she's definitely like weirdly sexualized in this. Like, it has that feeling of like, just let kids be kids a little bit. But especially because she's Black, it's like made into this kind of like other level of like, oh, that's really weird and gross. Yeah, and like there's just so much of like Chloe being an object in this. Like the first thing that Gerald's saying when they first meet Chloe is, why can't I have just one thing that he can't take from me? And he sees her, and it's like literally the word thing is what is like the operator for what she enters the scene as. Later in the episode, Gerald, before fighting Jamie O, says, you think you can take my stuff whenever you want? Not this time, not Chloe. Like, she's literally just an object to Gerald as he speaks it. And to Harry's point, like, I do think a lot of this stuff, maybe it was just the culture of the 90s, but a lot of this could be really damaging to kids and how they think about some of these things. Like, these are the subtle little ideas that kids absorb as social norms. And whether it's, you know, in this case, it's fairly blatant, but like some of those things are just kind of coded as like, this is normal. This is a normal situation for you to, like, Gerald walks in after meeting her, like walks in the door while she's still outside and says he's in love. Like, that isn't what love is. That's not normal. But I could totally see like a 9-year-old emulating that behavior and being like, oh, I think this person's hot, I'm in love. Like, there's no separation there, and there's no fleshing out of like, what does it really mean to love somebody versus to just be attracted to them? What's appropriate behavior when you're attracted to somebody? Like, it's surely not fighting your brother about them. And then there are those parallels with Jamie O in love, where it's like, in Jamie O in love, sure, the evil woman really would just stayed evil. And in this case, Chloe does come clean. But really, her only dimension is that she's like selfish. You know, maybe not evil straight up, but she doesn't care about what Gerald is feeling because she's so deeply in pursuit of Jamie O. There is something to be said there about just kind of like the ways that love and hormones and whatever can cloud your vision and obfuscate what's really important in life. But that point is really not made as clear as just like, it's okay to fight over somebody if you like them because they're your property, they're your territory. Anyone who impinges on that is basically stealing an object from you that is yours. Those aren't healthy ways to look at relationships with other people. And you know, even, and then, you know, even there is like a sort of a shining light at the end where Jamie-O is like, hey, I get what I did wrong. I'm really sorry. I will change my behavior. And then, like Emily said, just immediately flips it and it's just like completely moot. And it just cheapens the whole thing. It's like you couldn't even get this one good little piece out of this episode to carry through.
Yeah, that's, it's tough. Sorry, Harry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, really great points, Nikki. And also, like, the it should be noted that, like, the way that Nikki characterized it so well, it makes it sound like naturally the thing that the episode would be doing is like, oh, you shouldn't objectify women, right? Like it sounds so obviously like that's the problem that has to be dealt with. The show never even challenges that. Like at the end of the episode, the lesson, quote unquote, that these two learn is that brothers shouldn't fight. Basically, not that like, oh, like Gerald was not thinking about this woman in the proper context and was objectifying her because of his own insecurities about his brother. And that ended up creating this terrible situation where he dehumanized Chloe. It's like, oh, it was actually wrong for Jamie-O to do those other things to bring Gerald to this point, which is like, okay, like, so like, in addition to everything else we've been saying, like, it also is just like, extremely weird about like it like literally puts Chloe in the episode to be objectified and then sees no problem with the objectification of her as such, right? Like the episode itself does not even push back on the objectification of Chloe.
Yeah, very true. And y'all have done a really good job up to this point characterizing that main big problem with this episode, so I'm not gonna I fully agree and support all of that. The one thing I will add, just from my own perception of the show, I definitely felt while watching this more uncomfortable than I have with any other of the sort of like manipulative woman trope episodes, with like the conversations of, well, I guess like the manipulative woman episodes, and then like the Venn diagram of like episodes where we're like they're aged up stories and we're getting into those, as it's been said, like those like promiscuous, like leaning, those sort of thematically tough conversations that it's, I don't know, weird for 9 year olds to be experiencing, which I also feel kind of weird tiptoeing into that territory. But I like, this was an uncomfortable episode for a lot of reasons. That was one of them, even more than, I mean, in retrospect, Summer Love is probably like the worst offender. It just had so much going on. That was a big, it was an epic, you know, two-part episode spanning all of the characters of the show. And so like you could focus on other things for a little while that were equally problematic and rough to watch. Whereas this was just, you know, 11 distilled minutes of the same sort of trope and tropes. And so we didn't even have, it's been gestured at, and this was a sticking point with me as well, how this is positioned as a brother against brother episode. And it's not even particularly like good at doing that, which is a bummer. I gravitate a lot toward like shows and movies and works in general that explore those tough sibling dynamics. And I forget who mentioned it at this point, probably all of you, but the fact that that is a dynamic that is otherwise missing from this show, it would have been really cool to see that play out and explored more in depth, you know, just sort of like a Gerald and Jamie-O bottle episode. Why not? And especially because they went out of their way to be like, yeah, this is Gerald's house. He has a ping pong room that has like arcade games. There's a weight room. Like it's a very vibrant and attention getting environment, especially for kids who might be watching and would have a reason to like gravitate toward watching this particular episode that might otherwise be like difficult to digest on the surface. This hypothetical episode being like a, you know, mano y mano brother standoff episode, boxing bells ding ding type of episode, but we didn't quite get that, and that's again, that's kind of a bummer. Jamie-O is a tactless sort of big brother character. He's just like one note evil. He has literal like evil cackles that he emits throughout the episode, which is, I don't know, because it's, if I thought it were like intentional exaggeration or caricaturization, then like maybe it would be funny, but it felt kind of tactless. He's just blatantly gross, shoveling food in his mouth, picking his ears. Like, I don't know what happened to this character. This is a way different version of Jamie O than we've gotten in any other, like previous earlier episodes of this show. So that's on top of everything else. That was just kind of a bummer. I tried to keep my head above water for this episode, but there's no denying that it's a tough watch for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, well, I would say that I think Nikki mentioned this, but I actually do kind of think that there's a kernel of an interesting idea here, in the sense that Jamie O is at no point interested in Chloe, right? Like, he's very clearly like, stop bothering me. He is as uninterested in Chloe as Chloe is in Gerald, but like more openly. I kind of like the like weird anti-love triangle that plays out over that episode, if it wasn't so gendered and so racialized. But like, I hate to keep just beating up on this episode, but like, it does need to be said that this is a particularly bad message for kids around this age, right? And we've talked about why before, because like, this is a show kind of all about the differing rates at which girls and boys mature, and how that can create some weird sort of like awkward power and intelligence imbalance and emotional intelligence imbalances between them, right? Like, that's kind of the story of Helga and Arnold. And like, a lot of like being a kid this age is about like navigating those imbalances, right? Like, I think that's where a lot of the like boys versus girls stuff comes from, and the whole like girls have cooties thing from like you know, playgrounds from time immemorial. And like, that's why I feel it's like particularly important not to be misogynistic about like those relationships at this point in children's age, because like, they're already dealing with things that they're having trouble understanding. And like, it's like, very seldom do we get Hey Arnold episodes that like legitimately give kids bad tools, right? But like, I think this is one of them where it's just like, hey, like, kids should not think about relationships with the opposite gender this way. It's bad for them to do so. It would be particularly bad for boys around this age to watch an episode like this and come away with those feelings. And then finally, my last sort of big point, I guess, is like, I wish that there was an episode that had done all of this better. And then it's like, oh wait, Sixth Grade Girls with Connie and Maria way back in season one, like, did almost all of this stuff, and it was still a manipulative woman episode, but it kind of did it a lot better anyway. And so it's like, in addition to everything else, like, why do we have to keep going back to this well, right? Like, it's not that potent a place. Like, we have covered this subject matter better before many times on this show. So like, it makes me like, I don't know. I just like, I wonder why they felt the need to do an episode like this, and why they feel the need to keep coming back to this. And it's just sort of like really a black mark on this show's record, I guess. I don't know.
Dang, giving the show a demerit. It is pretty well.
Yeah, I've been taking a lot of Principal Wartz-esque language this episode. I guess I'm just thinking about some episodes to come, perhaps, where Wartz will get his day in the sun, so to speak.
Yeah, true. Well, as it's been said, not by us on this show, I think, ever before, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think we're all stronger as a result for giving this episode a go, trying our hand at characterizing it. I'm glad we ended up in this spot, which is to say, you know, we felt a certain way about it, but was there anything we left on the table? I should put that out there. No, any dangling threads, lingering shout outs, threads we didn't get to, anything like that that we want to touch on?
Yeah, I absolutely want to shout out Phil Lamar as Jamie O. Really just great voice acting. And also, this is when Phil Lamar was on Mad TV. So like, a really different version of Phil Lamar, which I think shows his range as an actor. I just think he deserves respect always. A very talented person out there. Yeah, other than that, I feel like the backgrounds are really good. You know, the music's always really good, but there isn't a lot in this one that I really loved, apart from Phil Lamar's acting.
I would just like to say a shout out to Alien Dwarf Clown 6. It's the name of the show they're watching in the episode. show within a show, which would have been a better episode. Very good.
Also, yes.
Shout out to, first of all, Gerald's special limited edition Pop Daddy shirt. And then also Jamie O, like, taking it and ripping the sleeves off and wearing it, even though it exposes his midriff really bad. I thought it was hilarious to watch him walk around. He looks great. I mean, he looks great in that Pop Daddy shirt, but it does make me mad to think about the fact that, like, Gerald was so looking forward to that shirt and Jamie O just stripped it away from him.
If anyone out there makes that shirt, I want that shirt, please.
Yes. That would be amazing.
It's funny, we're actually gonna, our plan that's been under wraps for a while, we're gonna spin off of this podcast, open up an outlet store, Hey Arnold affiliated merchandise, unlicensed by, you know, Nickelodeon, Craig Bartlett, etc. Pop Daddies, there we go, I butchered the punchline, but Pop Daddies, Daddies is spelled with a Z. We'll sell the shirt. We're not going to sell it sleeveless. You got to rip the sleeves off yourself. That's, like, I think part of the grab, you know, right? Part of the get. It's a reason to get it, but all that will come in due time. For right now, I just want to be appreciative of the time that we spent here today talking about this zany pairing of episodes with our friend Nikki. Nikki, thank you so much again for being here today. If you wouldn't mind reminding folks where they can find you, if you want to be found, and if there's anything you would like to plug for the fine folks who may be listening.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me here. It's always a pleasure. If you're interested in finding me on the internet, you can do so on Instagram. I am at HorrorWizard, HorrorWizard. And as far as plugging things, just protect your trans friends and gendered nonconforming friends. They all need it right now. It's a tough time. Everybody needs a little extra love. Yeah, be nice to people. And especially also, be nice to people who are more vulnerable than you in any way that you can discern. And be nice to animals.
I can't think of a better sentiment to go out on. Thank you very much for that, Nikki. To you listening, do what Nikki says. Love those who need the extra love, especially right now. However, in the meantime, thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids spelled with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry. Oh, and we should say, in case we haven't been clear, if you're a transphobe, don't listen to this podcast. We don't like you. We're not fans of you. And you should reconsider your life and make better choices about who you are, because being a transphobe is a really terrible thing to do. So, find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
True. I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And just one more thing, one more question for you all. Can somebody carry me? I know I can do this in two breaths, and I think I'm just going to need one more try.
All right.
I need to. It's going to bug me because I did it before this and it was fine. But okay. Gerald tells the story of the ghost bride, Cynthia Snell, and how she brutally murdered her fiancé after he left her waiting at the altar and married her sister, who she also murdered. When the police came to the scene, she was still there, sitting in a rocking chair in her wedding gown, tossing rice on the bodies as she hummed the wedding march, and before they could arrest her, she jumps out of the second-story window and kills herself instantly. She also happens to be buried in the cemetery near the gang's neighborhood and supposedly comes back from the dead every anniversary of the murders. Arnold, Gerald, Eugene, Harold, Sid, and Snicky are scared twice by Helga and Curly, each pretending to be the ghost bride. Helga because she wanted to get back at the boys for not inviting her, and Curly because he was jealous he did not get to tell a ghost story. As punishment, the kids tie up Curly in the crypt, where at the end he hears the real Cynthia Snell, although it's possible that he was only hallucinating. Easy.
Got it. Nice.
Got that out of my system.
Easy.
Fatality? It's a video game reference.
Fatality. Fight.